if you are going to have meaningful conversations, you know, you can't stick to the script. And in a lot of early new podcasters make this mistake. They ask a question, the guest gives them an answer that's more interesting and provocative than you know what they thought. And you know, there's a critical point there where they decide, do I ask the next question or do I go deeper on what that can of worms that they just opened up? And naturally, you want to open up the you want to open up that can, and you want to go deeper on those interesting topics, because your listener is hearing that as well, and they want you to go down that rabbit hole, and they want you to pull that thread out, and they want you to have that deep and meaningful conversation, because at the end of the day, this is a very intimate medium.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing, and you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I do hope also that you enjoyed our most recent interviews with Oscar Trimboli and with Simon Lamy. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Harry Duran, who's host of the Podcast Junkies podcast. Harry also runs a full-service podcast production and marketing service where he helps highly successful thought leaders grow their network and expand their reach through podcasting. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, don't worry, just click on the Take a Peek Inside button. It's blue. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, so go check it out. In our discussion, Harry talked to me today about the value of podcast interviews to build relationships, to grow your network, and to position yourself as an expert in your space. We talked about how to promote your podcast content in a platform-specific way so that it is likely to generate engagement on every social platform. And this advice that Harry shared with us is applicable to all social media marketing, not just podcast-specific. And we also talked about the importance of experimentation and being comfortable with failure. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Harry Duran. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Los Angeles in California, Harry Duran, who's host of the Podcast Junkies podcast. He also runs a full-service podcast production and marketing service, helping successful thought leaders grow their network and expand their reach through podcasting. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Harry. It's a real privilege to have you here as a guest.
Thank you, Jürgen, for having me on the show. Always looking for opportunities and enjoying opportunities where I get to talk about podcasting.
Yeah, and Eric K. Johnson, who was on episode 157 talking to me about podcasting, suggested that we speak with you, Harry. So a big hello to Eric.
Yeah, Eric's a great guy. We've been friends for a couple of years, as you might imagine, in the podcasting community. We all like to support each other, and he's been on my show, and we've met in person a couple of times. So he's a great resource for the community as well.
Mm, yeah, he certainly is. And he's got a wonderful knack for storytelling. So it was good fun to talk to him. So obviously, as a long-time podcaster myself, I'm really looking forward to geeking out with you about all things podcasting. But before we start talking about podcasting and podcast strategy and systems and marketing, let's find out a little bit more about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
So it started for me, I've been in corporate America for about 20 plus years. And so there's a whole story there about how that started. It was out of college, and I've worked for a lot of financial services companies, E-Trade. I was around for the dot-com boom in 99. So that was very interesting to watch and be a part of. And I've worked for JP Morgan Chase. And so it's been really interesting, mostly in the e-business route, not so much, you know, with these finance companies, not so much in the financial space, but also with e-business and seeing what was coming up with the likes of business intelligence software. So I really cut my teeth managing customer service reporting teams and implementing new technology solutions in these companies. And then I always had a yearning to do something entrepreneurial. Around 2012, I've always had a knack and a love for music and electronic music specifically, because I grew up with a love for DJing, and I had vinyl turntables and vinyl records, and I DJed my high school dance. So it's always been a passion of mine. And so I used to go to music festivals, and I would realize that I wanted more information about the DJs that were playing. So I created a mobile app with my friend, and it was called Know Your DJ. And it was an opportunity. Think of it as a Pandora or a Spotify, but specifically for electronic music. There's so many different genres within that music. And we just put together an app that would give them information about what their social media profiles, their Instagram, their Twitter, where their next gig was, some info on their bios. And so just a well-rounded profile of the DJ. And so I went to a conference in 2014 called New Media Expo in Las Vegas. And I wanted to learn how to podcast, because I was going to apparently try to interview all these DJs. And I quickly realized how hard it was going to be to track down all these globetrotting DJs. So I shifted gears when I started listening to these podcast breakout sessions. And Pat Flynn was there, Amy Porterfield, and a lot of interesting folks in the podcasting space. And I decided then and there that I was what I called a self-professed podcast junkie. And interestingly enough, the domain was available, Podcast Junkies. So I grabbed it, and I started to take classes to learn how to podcast. And I started to create this show with the sole intent of interviewing other podcasters. So it's a bit meta, but it's a podcast where I interview other podcast hosts. And I've been doing that since 2014. I just published episode 187. So it's, as you might imagine, been an incredible way to work and know folks within the community. And I do the majority of the conversations have been face-to-face, initially with Skype, and using call recorder, I was able to have the face-to-face conversation similar to what we've done today. And now recently with another company that I'm formally advising called Squadcast, where you can actually have the face-to-face conversation, but it only records the audio. So there's something powerful about having that face-to-face conversation for an hour. I built up a interesting relationship with the podcasting community, and I hired a business coach, and I realized a lot of what I didn't know coming from corporate America that I needed to learn from a digital marketing perspective. And for the past 3 years, I've been the founder of a company called Fullcast, and it's a full service done for you podcast consultancy where you come to us with the idea, and we execute everything that's necessary from a production and marketing standpoint to produce your show.
Mm. All right, that's fascinating. So it's kind of evolved from a love of DJing and wanting to provide some value to that community in terms of knowing your DJ.
Exactly.
Hmm. So I'll come back to Squadcast a little bit, because I've discovered that a couple of weeks ago, actually, and haven't really tried it out yet, because I don't want to try it out on a live podcast,
yeah,
obviously. So I might chat to you about that later. But in terms of what you do today, can you give us a brief snapshot? I mean, you did talk a little bit there about the podcast service and marketing through Fullcast. Now, so what is it you do, and why do you do it?
So it's interesting. One of the things that I learned as I was leaving corporate America, and I had this mobile app I was working on, I had just started podcasting, is that there was a lot that I didn't know about how it is one becomes an entrepreneur, how one gets involved in digital marketing, how to grow your sales, and how to build a team, and how to work with folks remotely, and you know, things they really don't teach you in college. And you don't learn, sitting in a cubicle. I'm a big fan of just inspirational folks, and there's someone who is actually Tony Robbins' mentor, The name escapes me for a reason. I quote him all the time, but he said you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And it was a quote that stuck out for me because I knew at the time that there was a lot of things that I didn't know and people that I really couldn't go to for questions, for answers about how to do these things. And I realized I needed to surround myself with people who have run successful businesses. And I made a significant investment in a business coach. And I entered this whole world of entrepreneurs, people who were making seven figures in their businesses purely online. And as you might imagine, Jürgen, it was really an eye-opener because I realized, wow, if they can do it, then I can learn from them on how to do it. And, you know, there's a friend of mine, Jason Gaynard, who says, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you need to be swimming in the deep end. You need to constantly be challenged about, you know, what you're capable of and what it is you don't know so that you can get information from people that can inspire you to do things that you didn't think you were capable of. And so I started working with this coach and I became involved in this community. And now, thankfully, a lot of these folks who run seven-figure and eight-figure businesses are my friends. And, you know, I can reach out to them if I have a question. And I realized, you know, it's a really interesting space. And, you know, what I realized with the people that get to this level is they've focused on what their genius is. So there's four types of tasks. Those you're incompetent at, those you're competent at, those you're excellent at, and your genius. And so incompetent, you should get those off your plate as fast as you can. One of the easiest examples is like if you have a maid come by and clean your house or someone to mow your lawn, you know, it's something that you have no business doing because there's people that can do that and who are experts in that and they can do it better than you.
Mm.
And then, so the excellent ones are where we get stuck because these are tasks that we probably learned a skill and maybe growing up. And for me, it was a little bit of web design. I like to dabble in HTML and CSS and it's like, oh, I could hold my own and yeah. I built a couple of websites from scratch, which is, you know, something maybe you can relate to, Jürgen. But I remember one time I got stuck on my site trying to fix something on the sidebar. And it was something to do with an image and I was trying to resize it. I was spending hours trying to fix it. And then I finally just got frustrated and I reached out to a developer friend of mine and he fixed it within like 15 minutes. And it was just such an eye-opener because I said, wow, that's your genius, you know, and that's something I'm really good at, but I'm not, you know, you could say I'm excellent at it, but I'm not, that's not my genius. And, you know, I realized, you know, so much, it just makes us more sense to have someone do something that, you know, that's where they shine. Because, you know, you have to think about what an hour of your time is worth. So I really encourage your listeners to, you know, take, you know, whatever it is you're making on an annual basis, get that down to an hourly rate. And if you can pay somebody less than that to do a task, then by all means, in the beginning, it may seem like a lot of money if you're paying someone $15, $20, $30, even $40 per hour for a task. But you have to put a price on what an hour of your time is worth. And so, you know, for me, I'd rather spend an hour with a prospect or, you know, a business owner or someone at a marketing agency or at a brand trying to work with them on understanding the value of what a podcast can do for them, rather than trying to, you know, work on some video editing or work on some, you know, web design stuff. Cause that's, you know, that's stuff that where I'd end up in a rabbit hole and it's not the best use of my time.
Yeah, that's great advice. So there's, I just hit the publish button this morning on the interview. I think it's episode 160 with John Jonas, who his business is all about outsourcing to virtual assistants. And that's very much the theme of his philosophy, which is focus on the areas that you add the most value to the business. And as you said, you know, your area of genius perhaps, and outsource everything else. And when you start doing that, the transformation, the personal transformation is amazing. And the transformation in the business is quite amazing too.
Yeah. The inspirational speaker is Jim Rohn. I don't know. I've quoted him hundreds of times. And this is one moment when I try to think of him, but it just came to me now. It's Jim Rohn.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that that quote. The other one that came to my mind was there's a friend of mine here locally. Now I'm having a mental blank. The Beechworth Baker, Tom O'Toole. And he says, everything you want is just outside your comfort zone. So that's around that stretching, which, of course, if you look at the idea of focusing on your area of expertise, you're still looking to extend yourself and grow, right? So there's, you've got to be aware that you don't get into a comfort zone simply by focusing on your area of expertise. There's still a growth element.
Yeah, because the growth comes from pushing yourself outside of that comfort zone. And if you sit in that comfort zone for too long, then what's happening is you're not learning what's the latest and greatest in your industry. And you're not also, you know, you maybe don't do it because you feel intimidated by the people that are in the room with you and you feel like you can't compete at their level. But I think there's something to be said about, you know, being uncomfortable and asking, you know, questions that you might not know the answers to, and realizing that we've all been there. And every entrepreneur, no matter what level they're at, struggles with what, you know, what we call imposter syndrome. So just realizing that that's always going to be something that's always going to be a part of your journey, and not let it be a hindrance.
Yeah. All right. Now, you mentioned that you've just published episode 187 of Podcast Junkies. I'm interested, how has the podcast evolved over the time? So it's been going 4 years.
Yes.
Yeah. So what changes have you kind of seen happen over time or engineered over that time? And, you know, what's been conscious and what's kind of been a big awakening for you in terms of, aha, I might do that different?
I think it's like with everything else in life, it's important to become a student of the craft. And for me, I've always been fascinated by having conversations with people. And naturally, in the beginning, with everything podcast related, when you start, you don't know what you don't know, and you become really nervous about the idea of having conversations with people. So you start out with your 10 questions that you want to ask and your piece of paper in front of you. And then you quickly realize that, you know, if you are going to have meaningful conversations, you know, you can't stick to the script. And in a lot of early new podcasters make this mistake. They ask a question. The guest gives them an answer that's more interesting and provocative than you know what they thought, and you know there's a critical point there where they decide, do I ask the next question or do I go deeper on what that can of worms that they just opened up? And naturally, you want to open up that can, and you want to go deeper on those interesting topics, because your listener is hearing that as well, and they want you to go down that rabbit hole, and they want you to pull that thread out, and they want you to have that deep and meaningful conversation. Because at the end of the day, this is a very intimate medium. You know, we're talking into just really quality microphones now, which result in a really rich audio experience. And 80% of podcasts are consumed on mobile devices. And so listeners have the earbuds in their ear. They're either, you know, they're walking the dogs or they're in traffic or they're cooking dinner. And, you know, they want to feel like they're there in the room with you. And so to the extent that you can make them feel like that and never forget that there's always that third person in the room, it's you, the guest, and the listener, and always speaking to the listener as if they're there and never leaving them out of the conversation, and you pull them in on that journey with you. And that's something that I found over the years, is just how do I make that happen more in a way that's more immersive for the listener? And also from a conversational standpoint, I consistently do research and I listen to other interviewers who I like. And I see how they handle conversations and what questions they ask and why it's important to ask open-ended questions. And also something that may not be apparent to new podcasters is to be comfortable with silence. A lot of times when you ask a tough question, the lack of immediate response is not because they don't have anything to say. It's because they're thinking about something thoughtful to say. And so the last thing you want to do is insert your nervousness into the conversation and say, well, you know, on to the next question, because you know, you've got the listener on the other end saying, no, wait, give him a couple more seconds, he'll answer. And so that's something that's also beneficial for me and why I use video a lot, because you get a lot of the body language. And you can see when someone's thinking, you know, you see their eyes roll up. I don't remember if it's to the left or to the right, but that shows that they're thinking. But just these little verbal cues are very helpful for you to allow the conversation to proceed at its own pace. And quite honestly, most conversations are edited in post-production anyway. So if there is an unusually long silence, you could always pare that down.
Mm. That's right. I was having a conversation with Oscar Trimboli of the Deep Listening podcast just last week, I think. So it's probably going to be published by the time this one airs. And we talked quite a bit about the silences. And it was a little intimidating for me to interview Oscar, because I was conscious of probably being guilty of that very crime. Not necessarily, let's move on to the next question, but not really waiting for the person to allow them to have that moment of thought and come back with some more depth on the answer, but jumping straight in and steering the discussion in a particular way. So it was a little intimidating, but I think we had a really good chat.
Yeah, that he must be an interesting person to speak with.
Mm, he is, very much so. All right, so do you have a structure then or a framework for your interviews, or do you really just have all your research that you've done and maybe a few bullet points that you want to explore and that's it?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was thinking through, I think I initially started with a structure and I had, to my point earlier, I had the questions that I wanted to ask. But it's interesting. I try to make it a point to have people on the show that I've had some sort of brief interaction with. And so typically for me, as you might imagine, if I have a podcast about podcasters, when you go to a podcasting conference, naturally, everyone offers up their show and they offer one to come up on the show. But I've had a lot of people that I've developed friendships with first, which is important because when they come on the show, we're just reconnecting as friends. And so we're just, revisiting our time that we spent at the conference or the beer we had at the bar. And we're just going deeper on the conversation. And there's something that you can hear as a listener when you know that two people have a previous relationship and there's a camaraderie and there's a warmth that you hear in the conversation. And you really don't get that a lot of times unless you have a really skilled interviewer. You've probably heard conversations that sound very stilted and sound like this is the first time that these two people are actually speaking and it comes across in the conversation. And so as a listener, you're just like, oh, well, they don't really know each other. And sometimes if the host is skilled and, they can take it down a path where they can actually learn along with the listener more about that guest, which is exciting sometimes too, because, there's something to be said for a host, having that natural curiosity and wanting to get the answers that they feel their listener would want from this conversation. And then you can tell sometimes when, hosts have done their research as well. So they've read the book or, they've done research into the guest's podcast history. They've listened to past episodes. And so they can make it a really engaging conversation. But I think it's really having a vested interest in your guest and what they have to say and being a listener. There's a lot of temptation nowadays with everything happened digitally. A lot of these conversations happening remotely, like for me or for you to be on the computer or on the browser and just researching stuff or taking a look at your Twitter feed, God forbid, while you're having the conversation. And, there's something to be said. I have a mantra that I say, treat your guests like gold, where I really I value their time and I value the time they've come to spend on my show and I value the contribution they're making to my audience. And it starts from the moment there, I start my initial conversation with them, whether that's in person or online, up until, the next step they take with me, which is how they're booking the actual call to be on my show, the experience they have doing that, if that's a friendly experience. And then everything leading up, obviously showing up on time for the call is really important. And then during the conversation, being as focused as you can on everything they have to say, expressing genuine interest in everything that they're doing. And then really leveraging your platform as a way for them to get their word out about what they do, whether they're an unknown or whether they're a mega popular podcaster. I try to give them all the same platform, to share their ideas. And then at the end, figuring out ways for my audience to engage with them on a more personal level if they want to. And even after the fact, I send them a detailed follow-up, letting them know when the episode's going to be ready. And then we create a Facebook group for our previous for all my previous shows, and if my guest wants to join, they can. And then I just keep an eye out. I watch the Twitter feed, I watch LinkedIn, I watch other social media channels. And anytime someone who's been on my guest previously does something notable, I pull it into the group and I'm like, hey, did you notice? We recently had a guest by the name of Jay Connor, who is the host of the Extraordinary Negroes podcast, and he was pulled into an interview on MSNBC. With some stuff that's recently happening in the news, and he sent me a screenshot of there. And so I was just, I'm sort of like the proud podcaster papa moment. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's great. And so I took the screen, I posted it in our podcast, Junkies group it's a Facebook group. And so anytime someone is doing something interesting, I always try to keep giving after the fact. So I never like to look at it as a transaction. These conversations that I have with these guests that come on my show, I always look at it as something long-term in terms of a relationship that I'm building.
Yeah, I was just going to move on to the question around relationship, but I love the idea of the Facebook group and inviting guests to that group as well. and yeah, highlighting what other people are doing, because you're not just building your own networks, you're kind of connecting other people as well, just adding value.
Definitely.
So was it episode 150 where you did a solo episode reflecting on kind of your journey so far with Podcast Junkies? And whichever one it was, you talked about podcasting as a network tool and building the relationship. So tell us a little bit more about that for the listeners today that haven't heard that episode.
Well, it was really interesting. And, you know, a lot of times I've done maybe two or three solo episodes because I just, you know, some people are comfortable talking on their own extemporaneously for half an hour or an hour for their solo shows. And I applaud them for it. But I think for me, I would just feel like I would run out of things to say. And you get this vision of you sitting in a room talking to yourself and you're just wondering like, who's listening to this? And so those are sort of harder for me to do. But every once in a while, I use a milestone to reflect on the journey so far. And for me, it's been interesting because I think I was an complete unknown in 2014 when I started. I mean, there was, we mentioned Eric K. Johnson, aka the podcast talent coach, who had, he was one of the folks who had a podcast about podcasting, but there was also School of Podcasting, Dave Jackson, who's actually a good friend of mine now, and Daniel J. Lewis, Audacity to Podcast, Ray Ortega with the Podcasters Roundtable. And, you know, there's probably a good, at this point, 20 or 30 podcasts just about podcasting that have come and gone. And I actually did a social media post on my website. I think at the time it was about the 20-something podcasts about podcasting. And so, you know, I was a bit nervous in the beginning saying, who am I to add my voice to this, you know, to this group of professionals who have been doing this and know so much more about me? But I just came in with this, you know, fresh set of eyes and a fresh set of ears. And I said, you know, I'm just coming in from a natural point of curiosity, and I want to know, and I want to tell these people's story. My example would be Inside the Actor Studio, which I've always enjoyed, and it's this idea of bringing the actor in, and you get to sort of get a peek behind their day-to-day real life, and they're talking about some of the movies they've done, but it's more of like a personal journey, and that was a bit of my inspiration for starting Podcast Junkies. And then I quickly realized early on that I wanted to have the face-to-face, because I wanted to build that interaction. And quite honestly, build that relationship in an industry where I was an unknown. So I started having these face-to-face conversations. And what I noticed was happening, Jürgen, is that I would go to the conference. You know, I've been to every single podcast movement. I was a funder of the original Kickstarter, so I've been a fan of those for a while. But there's a couple of other major conferences, PodFest, which I'm going to in March in Orlando. I'm good friends with Chris Kremitzos and John Dennis, the founders of that conference. There's a smaller one called MapCon, Mid-Atlantic Podcast Conference, run by my friend Joe Pardo. There's Jennifer Longworth has the DC PodFest. There's the LA PodFest I've been to. So I try to get to all of them as much as I can to support them. I was just in one in Australia called We Are Podcast, put on by my friend Ronsley Vaz. And it's just an excellent, excellent way to engage with the community. But there's something magical that happens when you have a face-to-face conversation with someone for an hour. You see them at the conference, and the relationship has already been, you know, somewhat built on that face-to-face. So naturally, you start to make inroads, and now you have someone to connect with at the conference, and that just builds. And so, as you might imagine, after 187 of those types of conversations, you know, I've built up a name for myself within the community, and people appreciate it, what it is that I do, because I'm giving a voice and telling podcaster's story. And you could have a podcast about bird watching, which you know, a previous guest by the name of Susie Buttress does. Which it's called the Casual Birder Podcast, and she's just a casual bird watcher, and her podcast is about bird watching. And then I had a woman on whose podcast is called Women of Hollywood Land, and Claire is her name, and her every episode is dedicated to one woman who was influential in the creation of Hollywood, and so she does an hour-long episode. And I love podcasts that just go down these small rabbit holes and that just are really scratching a specific itch for their host. And it's really interesting and fascinating for me to be able to have those conversations. Someone did a cold outreach on my website, and they were somewhere in Mississippi, I think it was, somewhere, one of the southern states in the United States. And they had a bar that was going to be closing down, so they decided to bring the recording gear there and interview the patrons, because it was going to be turned into like a mega mall bar and lose all of its character. And so they were able to capture the stories of the people who had grown up there and had been going to the bar for the past 15, 20 years and were lifelong friends. And so I was so interested in that story that I said, you know, sight unseen. I said, yeah, that sounds interesting. Just come on the show.
Yeah.
So it's been a great platform for me now. And now in the beginning, I used to be a bit strict and say, okay, you must have 50 episodes and that's the only way I'll speak to you because I know then you're serious. But now I've had people who have had, you know, just a couple of episodes, but I can tell that they're passionate about what it is that they do. And I've also been able to speak to influencers in the space who are, you know, have a business or are working on something related to podcasting. Because of the podcast, I was able to interview Andrew Mason, who's the founder of Groupon, because he's got a new service called Descript, which is a automated transcription service, which actually lets you edit. You can edit the word in the document, and by editing the word, you're actually editing the audio at the same time, which I thought was fascinating. And so that's his new project. And had it not been for my podcast, I wouldn't have had that opportunity to speak with him.
Hmm. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I've had the opportunities to kind of jump on board with the development stage of new software through the podcast, which has led to some interesting relationships as well. So there's so many possibilities. So how did you go about in the early days in particular of growing your podcast audience and getting to the point where other podcasters considered you a serious podcaster and they wanted to come on and talk?
Yeah, I think in the beginning it's a challenge for new podcasters, right? To have, you know, there's last count is 620,000 podcasts in Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and so it definitely that wasn't the number when I started. So, but I quickly realized, you know, I'm eternally grateful for those first 10 or 20, 30 folks that came on, you know, sight unseen to a non-existent show, because you know I was able to communicate with them. Or presented them some sort of a value. But a lot of what I did, Jürgen, early on was go to conferences, and I wanted to be where these podcasters were, and I developed a relationship with them, and I started the conversation with them, and I made myself valuable in their space, or I consumed content that they were creating. And so for me, it's a bit meta because it's a podcast about podcasts. So I would go to podcast conferences and I would meet people there. And I said, you know, we just had a great conversation. I said, this is so good. I want to continue this conversation. You should come on my show. And so that's how that started. But early on, you know, when I went to New Media Expo and I learned about podcasting, that's where I got my first interviews. And my first interview was with a gentleman by the name of Chase Reeves. He's part of the Fizzle Show, which is a podcast for entrepreneurs. It was such a good conversation. When I got close to my 100 episode anniversary, I reached out to him and I said, hey, would you want to come on for episode 100? And he said, yeah, sure. So he came on and, you know, we had a conversation that lasted almost an hour and a half, and it flew by because there was no format. I just turned on the mic and we just started talking about the most randomest things in the world. And I said, this is so great that I'd love for you to come on every 100 episodes. And so now that's a deal. Every 100 he's going to come on. And so as I get close to 200 now, it'll be fun to have him just come on and just see how life is going. And I think whether he has a podcast or not, it's just one of those nice things you can do to have these like regular things. And then I just started trying to be, you know, inventive with how I had my show. My artwork is ridiculously simple. It's just a yellow background with typewriter face Podcast Junkies, because I realized the importance of high contrast when it came to cover art. And it's stuck now. And what I started to do is I was inspired by a fellow podcaster by the name of Michael O'Neill of the Solopreneur Hour, who I had heard him mention one time the year before he had gone to a conference and made some shirts. So I said, well, this is a nice, interesting color combination. So I made about 50 shirts, yellow shirt. They're actually yellow shirts with the Podcast Junkies logo on them. And I just started handing them out. And so quickly realized that became a thing now because people started asking for the shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, what's that shirt? What is Podcast Junkies? And as you might imagine, the 50 went by pretty quickly. And so to the extent that it's in the budget, I've kept doing it. Naturally, when I the last time I went to Podcast Movement, I think I made 100 and they were gone, you know, within 2 days. Mm. And so it's been a nice little thing now that people see the shirts. They start to wear the shirts. They wear them on the flight home. They wear them while they're at home because it's a nice way to show your support for the podcasting community. And while it is the brand of my podcast, it's also a nice phrase for people to self-identify as a podcast junkie.
Yeah.
So that worked out. That worked out pretty well. And then just little things that I would do within the show. I was inspired by a friend of mine named Jesse Lawler, who was on the podcast previously. He's the host of Smart Drug Smarts, a podcast about you know, improving your brain health and advances in neuroscience. And he had something called the Ruthless Retention Gimmick, where he would mention a topic and then not cover the topic in depth until the end of the episode. And so I thought that was an interesting idea. So now I've created the retention hashtag. And so at the end of every one of my episodes, there's a hashtag related to the podcast episode, but I don't reveal the hashtag until the last couple of seconds of the podcast. So you actually have to listen to the whole thing. And then what I invite the listener to do is actually tweet about it. So I've got a couple of hardcore fans of the show. Patrick Keller is one who stands out. He's a host of the Big Seance podcast, and he's been a fan early on. And because of the timing or the time zone that he's in, he's generally one of the first people to tweet about the episode. And you can see that he's listened because he actually references the retention hashtag in the tweet. So that's really fun to see.
Yeah, yeah. I heard you mention that, and I thought that's a really neat idea. I mean, first of all, the idea of building the anticipation right up at the beginning of the podcast, but not revealing the treasure, if you like, until right at the end. But I also love the idea of getting that social engagement by asking people to post with the hashtag. I'm in the process of launching a second podcast, and this is a solo podcast. So I'm challenging myself a little bit here because I'm a little like you. I'm quite comfortable having a conversation like this, but talking into a microphone solo is a lot more challenging for me.
Yeah.
One of the ideas I had there was because people listen to podcasts in all kinds of different situations, and I thought post a picture of yourself listening to the podcast in your favorite place or something like that, and have that as a little social call to action that perhaps inspires some engagement and some community.
Yeah, we got to do everything we can to take the conversation, you know, to a different platform, because if they're just listening on their phone, you know, you want to say, and this is why it's really important to have engaging show notes so people can follow along. There's nothing worse for me as a podcaster. It's a pet peeve when people say they mention a great resource or a great book and they say, okay, look, we'll make sure we list it in the show notes. And then you go to the show notes and they don't put it there.
Yeah.
That's one of my pet peeves as a podcaster.
Yeah, well, that raises another question, which I've sort of got on my list of things to possibly talk about, and that's systems and processes. And I've been on podcasts and had that kind of experience, but I've also recently I was interviewed on a podcast, and I was doing some research for something completely different and happened to stumble upon this episode that had been published about 4 weeks before, and they hadn't even let me know that it was published. So, of course, I hadn't done any social media promotion of the episode when it first went live because I didn't know. And I thought, well, you know, you probably need to tighten up your systems and processes a little bit in terms of follow-up and letting people know that their episode's published and so on. So, yeah, give us a bit of an outline of some of the things that are really important to have in your process, particularly when you are interviewing guests, and you talked about building that relationship and making sure that all the follow-up was there.
Yeah, I think what happens with podcasters is they focus too much on the things that are, you know, really the tangible or the things that directly have a hand in. And so when you first get started, you focus on the microphone, you focus on getting your hosting it up, you focus on making sure you get a good recording and then publishing it. And there's a model that I take folks through. I call it the holistic podcaster model, and it's really, if you think about if people want to follow along at home, you draw three circles and in sort of a Venn diagram, so they're all connected. And then the first one, so these are the three pillars of a successful podcast, and the first one is to deliver a podcast, and that's a lot of what we focus on when we get started. And then to connect, and that's when we talk about how to produce your show and then where to publish it. And then deliver, we talk about planning and positioning, because a lot of times people don't put this work in the beginning. They just record the show without an idea for who the show is for, what the, you know, some thought process into the name of the show, because people try to get a little cute with their name sometimes, not realizing these aren't terms that people actually search for. So if you call it Three Guys in a Basement, you know, no one's actually searching for content that says Three Guys in a Basement.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I've been realizing recently is, you know, there's two fields in iTunes that are searchable, and that's the name of the title of the name of the show and the author tag. So use those judiciously. So these are the things you think about when we're talking about the deliver phase, you know, how to position your show, you know, who the show is going to be for, and the plan you're going to make for how you're going to roll this out. And then in that second pillar in Connect, we talk about focusing on production. So making sure you're delivering a quality show, you're recording in high quality, and how you're editing your show, And then where are you going to publish the show? What are the main platforms that you need to be on? Obviously, you need to be with a reliable host. Anything, I mean, there's so many options there now. Libsyn, Simplecast, Transistor, Podbean, Blueberry, you name it. There's about 10 that are reliable. You never want to host content on your own site because your podcast, your website hosting company wouldn't take kindly to that. Mm-hmm. And then the third pillar is what I call influence. And that's really where you ramp up promotion and then you model what your profit is going to look like, you know, how that's going to look for you, whether it's going to be sponsorship, whether it's just going to be a plan for you to get more listeners to the show, more engagement. You know, a lot of people think profit initially has to only be dollars, but you know, that could come through the form of sponsorship or you getting more abilities to speak on other platforms. As you might imagine, after years of podcasting, you know, you have the, you're demonstrating thought leadership for your specific topic. And if you've got people who are, you know, want to hear what you sound like, then there's no better demo reel to send them to than all your past episodes. So those are the things that you think about in the influence phase. And when I talk about ramping up promotion, it's just not only are you publishing to the standard places that people would normally publish to, but as you post your feed to Twitter, are you creating audiograms? Are you pulling snippets of your audio out? There's a great site called Headliner, headliner.app, that allow you to create an audiogram, which is an animated WAV file combined with audio. And what that does is it allows you to promote your audio in a visual medium on sites like Twitter and on sites like Instagram, because typically there you would only post cover art. But because they're now allowing 1 minute and 90 second videos on these platforms, you can actually show, you can have audio and give people a taste of what your episode is going to sound like and a little snippet, a little sneak peek of your audio. So just kind of thinking of all those different ways. Are you creating artwork that's customized to each of the social platforms? You know, we've all seen posts that look like it was the post that was on Twitter that was automatically forwarded to Facebook. And then the artwork is cut off because it's not sized for Facebook. And it just looks like you're just, you know, basically using one platform to send to all the other different sites. So each platform has its specialty. You know, the way you would post something on LinkedIn is different than how you would post something on Twitter. If you post something on LinkedIn, you actually have the ability to tag the guest because you know that they're likely on there. So, you know, be thoughtful about how you're promoting on all these different platforms. Are you you leveraging other sites? Are you making a transcription of your audio? Are you leveraging sites like Medium, which is a very popular long-form content where you can actually post recaps of the episode? Are you taking your transcriptions and uploading them to YouTube as captions? I did research on this and I found that if you actually manually load captions to a YouTube video, you get more SEO juice than if you would just normally allow YouTube to use its automated caption feature. So it's little things like this that you have to do a lot of testing, a lot of iteration, seeing what works, what doesn't. There's a lot of things that I tried to promote my show early on that didn't, that fell on its face. It didn't work. But what I realized is there were a lot of things that were working. And over the years, I started piecing all those things together. And that's how I built this model. And that's the exact model we now use when we launch our client shows.
Mm. Yeah, well, there are a lot of great tips there. And I wasn't aware that you could, that the manual captions in YouTube gave you better SEO results. So I might have to look at that myself. And we've been playing a little bit with Medium. So that's certainly another one. And I love the Headliner, the, what are they called? Audiograms.
Audiograms, yeah.
That certainly has generated a lot more kind of interaction on particularly Twitter. And we're really just getting started with Instagram now, but I can see the potential value there. So looking forward to seeing how that goes. The other thing I noticed you did, but you were, I think you wrote a blog about it saying you were in two minds about this, and that's repurposing some of your episodes in a book called Around the Podcast Campfire. So how much repurpose or how much value do you think that actually gave you, and how much other repurposing do you do of all of that content that you have with, you know, 185 or whatever?
Yeah. At the end of the day, obviously it comes down to what you have available, both from a, you know, where you can make an investment in order to do it correctly. And when I first got started, and I didn't have my company at the time, so I had more free time and I was able to find a relatively reasonable editor to help me out with the process. But I took those first 25 episodes and we were able to categorize the episodes into different categories. So, you know, these were conversations about technology. These were conversations about social media. These were conversations about the importance of networking. And I created that first book called Around the Podcast Campfire, which is really helpful, you know, just to kind of paint a picture of the industry. And I had the thought of doing it every 25 episodes. And then I quickly realized how much work it would be. But I'm a huge proponent. And we worked with a client early on with my company by the name of John Livesay, whose podcast was called The Successful Pitch. And he helps startups perfect their pitch as they're getting ready for funding. And he took his, I think it was about 20 episodes. At that point, he had had probably about 60 episodes in the can. So he basically picked the cream of the crop. And he actually worked with the guests. And he says, hey, I'm thinking of including you in the book. You know, do you think you'd be able to help with the promotion? So if done correctly, you can actually partner with your previous guests to help make sure that you stand the most chance of success. And naturally, as guests and who are providing content for the book, you know, that's another resource for them to highlight their value, because they can now point to the book as a place where, you know, what's important for them is being published, and they can actually consider themselves published because they're in that compilation. And so he was so successful with the book that he started working with a publisher and a PR agent in Los Angeles, and he ended up on TV. And so he was on the local news talking about the book called The Successful Pitch, which actually was content that came from his specific podcast episodes. So I'm a huge proponent of repurposing content. We actually, for some of our corporate clients, we take the transcription, and rather than just make it a standard text document transcription, which is pretty easy to do nowadays, in line with my corporate experience, I remember reading the likes of like the Harvard Business Reviews white papers. And I said, you know, why don't we create content that's more visually compelling with some branding, some corporate branding on there. So for some of our clients now, we actually take the transcription and we rebrand it as a white paper. And we take some of the tweets, because we pull out about 3 to 5 tweetable quotes from each episode. And so we put those in the margins. And so we really package it into a nice white paper format that's really pretty to look at. Nice to read. And again, people consume content different ways. You know, you can't assume everyone that listens is immediately going to get all the content that you're publishing in one shot. So if it's really content rich, they're going to want to go back and revisit. And what better way to do it on their own time in a relaxing environment by just printing out the white paper format of the transcription and just reading through it to get, you know, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes I still like reading hardcover books and pulling out my highlighter and making comments in the margins. And, you know, there's people that still enjoy doing that sort of stuff. So creating content that you can repurpose from your existing podcast in a variety of different ways. We've already touched on audiograms. We've talked about different ways to tweet content. We pull out quotes, like I mentioned, and then we pull out that 15 to 30 second audio snippet that we use to create the audiogram. So it's, again, you're taking the same exact content, the same interview, or the same solo episode, and you're thinking about all the different ways that you can take content. And a lot of our clients are now starting with video as well. So you start with the video, we repurpose the video to YouTube, we can take a video snippet, we can convert that video to audio as well.
Mm. Yeah, I really like the white paper idea. It's in a format that you could almost then pull together a bunch of white papers as a compilation or a book.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, that does add value. And as you say, sometimes it's nice to sit down with a hard copy book. I've got one on my desk here that I'm marking up with highlighters and scribbling notes in there. But I've already read the electronic version and listened to the audio version. So
yeah,
sometimes it's good to have a physical thing in your hand to read.
Yeah, I think there's still a generation of folks that appreciate having that handy and just... And every once in a while, believe it or not, you find yourself in a place where there's no Wi-Fi and your battery life is at zero, and you have to, you know, pull out your trusty hardcover old school book to get you through the day.
That's right. Yeah, when the technology falls over. All right, Harry, this has been fabulous. I could go on for ages about podcasting, but you've given us so much great advice and time is moving on. So I think we should move on to The Buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really short, insightful answers that will inspire everyone to go and do something awesome today.
Okay.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I touched upon this earlier, but I think you need to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you.
Mm. Yeah, great advice. And that's the Jim Rohn quote, right? We'll remember it's Jim Rohn now.
Yeah.
What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I think for me, it's really we're in such a digital world where we tend to become a bit insular, and we think that we can learn everything from the safety of our own home. So I think in along the lines of pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, I like the idea of attending conferences related to your field, your industry, whatever you're a fan of, and then collaborating with colleagues on projects is really been able to expand my mind.
Mm, that's great advice. Yeah. And certainly in your example, that was a major contributor to a lot of the relationships that you built through the podcast and helped you grow the podcast. So thanks for that. What's your favorite resource that you use most often?
I think I'd have to. It's a draw. I'm a huge proponent of Slack. It's been such an instrumental part for us for relationships I've built in the podcasting community, and then even for us with my business and communicating with teams in remote locations. It's a pretty powerful tool, and you can get a lot done. And then from just the implementation of standard operating procedures, I'm a huge fan of Process Street. Mm. It's at process.st, but it's a great way. I've also read Sam Carpenter's work, The System, which is the Bible for all things SOP related. So I recommend that to your listeners.
All right. We'll include links to those in the show notes. So we were users of Process Street, but we've since moved into a system that I think suits us better. But that's not to say that Process Street isn't a great product. It is. And Slack, of course, I'm on Slack all the time, so couldn't live without it. All right. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
This is an interesting question, because it's something that I've had to find out the hard way. What's the best way to not keep a client on track? But it's really simple. It's actually regularly scheduled communication, you know, and I think it's not taking your clients for granted and understanding the old mantra of it's cheaper to keep a client than to acquire a new one. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes, and we tend to rest on our laurels and we're happy with the folks that we have that have decided to work with us, that we don't give them the love that they deserve. And we also, you know, don't check in with them periodically to find out what's working and what's not. And a lot of times you'll get it in the worst way possible when they tell you, hey, it's been nice, but we're moving on to another provider, and, you know, you're caught off guard. So you know, preventive communication, I think, is really key there.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And, you know, I'm guilty of ignoring that advice from time to time as well. So it's good to be reminded of that. And one of the things you said about, you know, giving love to existing clients, one of the things that really annoys me in the consumer space, this happens a lot, where you'll see advertisements for, well, let's take an internet service provider, for example, because I've recently actually gone through with this exercise, where one company will say, well, there's this special offer. We'll waive the $300 connection fee and we'll give you a 20% discount for the life of this plan on your monthly fee. But it's only available to new customers. And I always think,
yeah,
what do existing customers think about that? Paying the full fee. And yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks that, because I see that same thing with internet service providers, cable service providers. You know, it's this weird law. They just lose the fact that I think they just want to put all their effort into getting new people. And you know, as to your point, as an existing customer, you're just, you know, staring at that special and you're like, why can't I partake of that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. What's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think personally, to lead from your heart, and be the first one to admit mistakes, and, you know, keep that in the business context, but just, you know, try to develop a relationship with your prospects and with your listeners and with your clients, whatever it is, and where you're speaking honestly about what it is that's important to you. And, you know, that you may be proclaiming things that are different or that are not in line with folks that currently work with you or who might want to work with you. And that's fine, because you can't be all things to everyone. And I think letting people know what it is you stand for is important. And then, you know, being the first to admit when you've made a mistake, I think, is really important, and being proactive with that, so the client doesn't catch you in it. It's better to just fess up. And then, so just, I think that'll go a long way towards building more stable relationships and meaningful relationships.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. And sometimes ego gets in the way there, doesn't it? And
I've been very guilty of that.
So, yeah. being honest about what's important to you, speaking up for what's important, and then really focusing on those relationships, which comes back to your earlier answer on keeping projects or clients on track as well, that regular communication. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Harry. This has been fabulous. Thanks for getting us through the buzz. And where can people reach out and say thank you for what you shared today? And also, I know you've got a special offer for our listeners.
Yeah, I put together something I call the Ultimate Podcast Launch Game Plan, and it's just a free download. It's a PDF which outlines from the earlier conversation about the three pillars of a successful show, and the six things people need to be looking at when they're creating a show. So that's I've created a special URL for that. So if you go to fullcast.co, which is our website, and then /InnovaBuzz, InnovaBuzz, if I've got that correct. And it'll be a URL specifically I created for the listeners of your show in appreciation for the time you've given me on your stage, which I'm always eternally grateful for. And if people want to engage with me on social media, I'm at Harry Duran FC, the FC for Fullcast. So Harry Duran FC on Twitter and on Instagram.
All right. We'll post all those links in the show notes, and we will genuinely do that. Like you said earlier, some people forget that we will make sure we don't.
I'll be looking out for those.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, finally, Harry, actually, no, there's one other question I normally ask, which is what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
To be comfortable with failure.
Hmm.
I think as entrepreneurs, and this is something I learned the hard way, that I would take each failure personally, and I would think that it's something that something that pointed to me not being a personal failure and something that I did wrong. But what I quickly realized as entrepreneurs is that we have to be comfortable trying new ideas out, because we are at the forefront of business, you know, as entrepreneurs, and we have to be trying new things out. And this is where the best ideas come from. And so what I've learned is that I need to be comfortable with failure and learn how to fail fast and, you know, fail often and get up. And what I've learned to do is just dust myself off faster and just say, you know, that didn't work. What's next? What's my next failure going to be? Because as you might know, you know, it's inevitably after you've experienced enough of them, you land on the one idea that makes sense, but you wouldn't have gotten there if you hadn't failed with the other ones the other 99 that you tried.
Hmm. That's great advice. And the important thing, as you said, for entrepreneurs is to be trying new things, which means experimenting, which means that there's essentially no guarantee or no safety net of success. And so failure is something that you're likely to encounter. My business coach says there's no such thing as failure. It's just feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why, Harry?
Let's see. That's a good question. I'll have to think about that. I don't know if I have a name handy for you. I'm trying to think about people that I've had recently on the show. And it's someone who's just generally anyone in the entrepreneurial space or folks that are doing just all sorts of interesting things.
Yeah, people that are in the entrepreneurial space who are kind of doing something very innovative.
Yeah, so maybe one of the companies that I'm currently working with is a company called Squadcast. And so maybe getting the founders on there, they recently started their podcast called Between Two Mics. And so they've got a really unique story, and they're they've got an interesting offering for the podcasting community as well. So I think in line with this idea of taking an idea from inception to actually executing it and having it become a paid solution that people are now using on a regular basis, I think they've got a really interesting story.
All right. Well, we might get an introduction to the Squadcast founders and speak to them. I'm really interested in that, because I have come across their platform, as I said to you earlier, might have been pre-interview, that I found them maybe 4 weeks ago, but haven't pulled the trigger on trying that out, because obviously I need to try it out on a dry run rather than a live podcast to feel comfortable and learn how to use the system and know that I'm doing it right before we actually record a live interview.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and insights with us today, Harry. I've had a blast today. I always love talking podcasting, and you've shared so much great information, so many tips that I've written down here. I've filled a whole page with notes. I'll have to go and review those, and there's a couple of things I'll probably implement straight away. So I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jürgen.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and thoroughly engaging conversation with Harry, and like me, learnt a lot. Harry certainly shared a lot of valuable tips about starting and growing a podcast, tips that are in fact applicable to any project. I love the suggestions of repurposing content from audio to YouTube, to audiograms for short videos, and also making the show notes into white papers. Of course, there was so much more in the interview with Harry. I'd love to know what you took away from today's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/HarryDuran. That is HarryDuran. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/HarryDuran. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Harry there, as well as links to the Podcast Junkies website, the Fullcast website, the free download of his Ultimate Podcast Launch Game Plan, and the other resources that we spoke about. Harry suggested I interview Zachariah Moreno, co-founder and CEO of Squadcast, on a future InnovaBiz podcast. So Zachariah, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Harry Duran. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Tune in again next week. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including public speaking and presentation coach Gigi Rosenberg and marketing consultant and speaker Letitia Stiles. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.